Welcome. Everyone but me. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's Fukushima irradiated and fluoridated. It's just fabulous. Everybody's enjoying a resurgence in the economy since they earned a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest, speaking of incandescent light bulbs, inferior technology, and mercury-laced light bulbs aren't really any better. I've got two guests hopefully on the line. My first is Mark Dancy. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm here in sunny Utah at the moment, covered in snow. But normally I reside not far from you, those mad Aussies who keep beating you at cricket.
My brother once told a joke to me. Man walks into a bar with a dog underneath his arm, and he orders a shot of whiskey for himself and a shot of whiskey for the dog. And they both drink it, and the dog throws the shot of whiskey into the fire, and just, and the bartender's pretty perplexed with this, and he goes, "What's with the dog, mate?" And the man says, "Oh, he does that every time the New Zealanders lose the cricket." And he says, and the bartender goes, "Oh, yeah? What does he do if they win?" And he goes, "I don't know. I've only had him 10 years."
And I believe, yeah, mate. Anyway, better introduce Sterling.
Yes,
he's in South America, I think, or somewhere.
Yeah, South America, where all the cocaine is. I'm sure he's very happy with that. Yeah, Sterling Allen is from PESWiki.com, PESWiki.com, the free energy Wikipedia. He's been a contributor to Guerrilla Media, and we've been reposting his articles for some time. And frankly, if you want to find a single source online where you want to learn practically anything you want about any type of real free energy device, this really is the place to go. Sterling, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice to be on your show.
Okay, so guys, what are we going to be talking about today? Mark, we haven't had you on the show before.
Well, I'm sort of the skeptic that a lot of the stuff that Sterling covers, I travel around the world and try and figure out what really is real and what isn't real. So I test the claims, and I work for a company where we're investigating and creating new energy devices ourselves, but a lot of my time is actually traveling saying, hey, if your car really runs on water or you've got a magnetic motor, whether they really actually have got that. Oh, just hang on, that's my phone. Keep going, I'll kill the phone. I forgot about that.
Oh, well, in fact, this is the most important part of the free energy community is debunking those people who are frauds. And in fact, I believe I had, what's his name from the Thrive Movement? I had Foster Gamble on the show once, and he was talking about this amazing free energy device that this guy had that runs his house, and it's about the size of a 9-volt battery and stuff like that. Doesn't need to be recharged. And then I talked to him later on, and he'd actually sent a team down there to ascertain whether or not this guy was full of BS. It turns out he was. It was a lie. So these kind of investigative skills are, as I said, so important to the movement in order to maintain its credibility, because anybody can say, I've got this device and it does that, that, and the other, but not everybody can prove it, and you can't start spreading it around to people before it's proven. Otherwise, you lose your credibility, and then people don't believe in free energy of any kind.
That's the problem, and you're 100% correct there. It's not always dishonest people. Quite often when we come across these devices or claims, it's not that they're dishonest people. They just may not be able to measure something properly. They're using the wrong sort of instruments, or there's something that's just confusing them. So there's some who just don't know how to measure stuff. There's some who are delusional. There are some dishonest, but there are some genuine people who are doing some good research. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, but really to keep the you know, to get the credibility you need to get these things put in production, or the investment, or the media, or even the government behind you, you do have to test these claims, and you have to do it to standards that are acceptable, I guess, by the rest of society. But there are some great, great things happening. I was down in Hollywood yesterday testing a technology, and it's just a very clever application of solar energy for the movie industry, and it was just brilliant. I mean, and there's a lot of traditional technologies that can be applied in different ways. And your country's a great example. Your country's got a lot of renewable energies.
Well, it does, but unfortunately they seem to be largely under government control. And of course, the truth about these renewable energies is very sparse because, like for instance, Wellington, our capital city, has one big windmill on it, okay? And I was talking with this environmentalist guy, and he said to me that that one windmill powers the whole city. And I was like, dude, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Okay, that one windmill tops powers maybe 10, 20,000 homes or something like that, and there's 100,000 plus in the city, not to mention all the office buildings or anything like that. Yeah. And it's not even that big a one. They require these huge giant wind farms with hundreds of windmills in places, and still it only accounts for like a couple of percent of the world's energy production grid. What the hell are you talking about? You know,
what I'd like to do is kind of set a context of where we could go with this conversation.
Sure.
I'm going to be posting a page in the next few days at pezwiki.com where I list, in the almost 11 years that I've been tracking these technologies, going out and seeing a few, and others reporting on what they find, including Mark. And he is a very excellent researcher in that regard. He's very thorough, and he wants to get to the truth of does this thing work or not. So we pay attention to what these people say. And as I have tracked this, I've come up with a listing of 24 conventional and what I call free energy technologies, meaning that they harness what Nikola Tesla calls a wheel work of nature, the energy provided freely from nature. Wind is free, solar is free, geothermal is free. 24 ocean currents, waste to energy, biomass. So it got 24 different genres, entire genres of clean energy technology. And typically, these are more expensive than what you pay for from the grid. I shouldn't say typically. As a rule, the only time you get cheaper is if somebody's thrown something away and you found it in the garbage, okay? That's the only time you're going to get cheap energy of the conventional free energy sort. On the unconventional side, the exotic free energy technologies, there are also 24 genres that I have tracked that where there are claims to working technologies. Now, whether or not every one of these genres actually pans out is yet to be seen.
Well, yes, Sterling, no, you're wrong there. Most of them been debunked. Seriously, some are worthwhile pursuing. But you show me one magnetic motor that's running, that you've claimed's running, one PAP engine, one free-running hydrogen engine self-running, one water-powered car. We've both been down the track. You've put a lot of work into this. A lot of other people put a lot of work in validating it. I remember the New Zealand water-powered motorbike. That one comes to mind immediately. But it's great to say that there's 24 genres and it's yet to be seen. Well, in a lot of cases, it has been seen. The jury's not out. It's finished. It's debunked. It doesn't work. And you really have to be honest about these things. Otherwise,
that's where we fundamentally disagree. Mark comes on the scene, and he judges things guilty until proven innocent.
Judges, I come on the scene with instruments,
and I judge things innocent until proven guilty, which, in my opinion, is the American way. And I consider Mark Danzy to be almost a devil in this industry because of his attitude is so negative. He almost derails things just by his attitude of going in, and the inventors don't want to talk to him, so he doesn't get a good test.
Excuse me. I see more inventors than you, mate. I did 46 flights last last year, 26 internationals evaluating the technologies yesterday.
You've heard of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, that the very act of observation changes things, and your attitude changes it to negative, and I would hope that my attitude changes things for the positive. I help things get accomplished where you think help things not get accomplished.
What have you accomplished, Sterling?
What have you just wait and see.
You
say that magnet motors have been debunked.
Yeah,
but this week, we are talking about a group that is going to a university in Europe to have a magnet motor tested for 30 days consecutive without stopping, two magnet motors, and you say it's bunk because you're so sure it's bunk. But this is going to be going to a university, and you're not willing to give them a week to prove this out. You have a negative, sucky attitude.
Okay, guys, can I just moderate this for a moment here? Okay, so on radio, when two people are talking, you can't hear anyone. Okay, so what I want to do is have one person talk, finish their point, and then the other person respond to that point. So what Sterling has just said is that you've said that you found a magnetic motor that works, and Mark fundamentally disagrees on that. Mark, what's your point that you'd like to add in?
Well, in the past, every single magnetic motor that's been claimed to work has either tested not to work, or it's a con man, or it's a scam, or whatever. This one's been running around for a few years. Some scientists, different groups have been around to try and test it. Nobody can confirm it. Then they say, oh, we're going to university. But what normally happens, oh, there'll be a delay. This one's already been delayed. And until they physically can do something, what's the use of promoting this stuff? I mean, Sterling, name me one magnetic motor of all the ones you've seen and all the ones I've tested that's ever worked. Now, are there some real technology out there worthwhile investigating further? Yes, there are. But in this case, no. I mean, how many times have we down the path of PAP engines, with self-running hydrogen generators, with whatever it is, and you claim it's real, it's real, it's real, and then it turns out it's not? Why not report the story, say what's claimed, which you do, and you do that very well, but then rather than proclaiming it's real and building up people's hopes all the time, wait until the fat lady sings, until the test data's in.
Sterling, your response?
Okay, is it my turn?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, he's referring to technology over in Europe, and I'll try and keep this as concise as possible. First of all, I got my start in free energy back in 2002, May, with a magnet motor, a claim to a magnet motor, which ended up not being bunk, but being a scam where the guy stole an idea from a patent that was patented in Brazil by a guy who presented a working magnet motor to the Brazilian patent office in order to get the patent. He took the design, didn't give credit to the inventor, and was taking people's money for a device that he never delivered, and ended up, he's now in jail. Mike Brady, of the Parandev fame, and I own the domain name Parandev.com because we were going to go into business with this guy, helping him expand this thing internationally. In 2002, I grabbed that domain name with his permission, and have now that forwards to our PezWiki coverage, where we say this guy is in jail for defrauding people, but it's based on a Brazilian patent. We give you a link to the patent. And we tell you, don't try and contact his inventor. He doesn't want to be contacted. And I know of somebody in South America who allegedly has been powering a house for 3.5 years using a variation of that technology. I have not been in to see it yet. I was hoping to see it one of these days, but that's probably not going to happen because he sees me as a blabbermouth, and he doesn't want this going out there. He wants to take this in a very measured, gradual way when he's good and ready, when he's got the money, and he's making some really good money right now. So that one, in my opinion, the jury's out. This thing in Turkey that he's talking about that has been around and people have tried to go in and see it. No one's been able to get a really good test. To a certain extent, that's true. He has given some tests, but they have not been long enough for the academic community to sign off on it. And he wants to be vindicated once and for all. So in Europe, there is going to be in a university. This is they presently are in communication with the university. The university is preparing a room specifically for this that will be insulated from all external electromagnetic interference, so that they can prove that this thing is functioning on its own, not through any inductive mechanism. And they're going to run this motor for 30 days. I have been in communication with several people with this company, and I am satisfied that they are fully intending to be vindicated. Now, if they are running a scam and they're just based on the hope of a vindication, they're getting in money, I put a note in my news to the effect that if you want to put money into this company, make sure that it is in escrow so that it is contingent on the successful validation of the technology, then they get the money. And they were fine with that wording. They didn't have any problem with that wording, and I find them to be very forthright and honest. They had a guy that I was working with.
Did you confirm it with the university, Sterling?
Well, in fact, we want to come back to that right after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Dancy and Sterling Allen are my guests having a debate over free energy. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder, incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly, leak parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges and the police trick, trap, rob, wreck, butcher, and murder the people to keep them terrorized in gangster Frankenstein earphone radio slavery for the communist gangster government and con artist.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
Playboy scum on top.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And now, my very special guests today, Mark Dancy and Sterling D. Allen from Pierce Wiki. Now, we're having a wee bit of a debate upon this topic of free energy. Now, two things we want to address coming back from the break from last one. Firstly, Mark has a question to Sterling regarding the university where he says that tests are going on with this piece of technology. And then after he's asked and answered that question, I have a question about patents and what the parameters are from them. Right, so, Mark, go ahead, ask your question.
Oh, I got just two questions, and you can take your time, Sterling. One is, which university is doing this? It's all being kept secret in cloak and dagger. That's not normally the way universities work. And my second question is, in all the years you've been creating free running energy devices, how many do you use in your everyday life of powering your house and car, or are you paying for electricity and buying gasoline just like the rest of us? They're my two questions.
Sure. First question is, how do I know the name of the university in Europe? No, I don't. They say that, and why would the university want to keep that confidential? Because we're dealing with an industry that has been poo-pooing the idea of a magnet motor for basically forever. And anyone who steps out and says that these things are real is basically committing academic suicide. And they don't want to do that until they have enough evidence that this thing, you know, is not going to go bad. And so they basically are holding the cards tight to their chest until something, you know, smells good. And then, you know, when the results come out that it doesn't work as claimed, I would imagine at that point, once they've got all the information and they can write a full report and they can put their name behind the report for good or for bad, then they go public with it. That's my understanding,
Sterling,
of how this goes.
Sterling, could I add on to that? Have you known or documented any cases where university research programs have perhaps been shut down, shut up, or sabotaged, or something of that nature, when testing or corroborating devices
kind
of this nature?
Yeah, Yeah, that happens all the time. And
could you just name a couple of quick examples?
On the Smart Scarecrow show this last Monday night, there was a guy on with Gary Hendershot talking about a situation he had where he was at a university doing some interesting research, and they basically, you know, there may be more to the story than what he's saying, but from his vantage point, he felt like they kicked him off campus. They at first were supporting him. They were allowing him to use the lab facilities. He was getting some really interesting results, and he basically found himself ostracized and kicked out off the campus because of the controversial nature of those results.
That's it was actually because of occupational health and safety he got kicked off. He wasn't complying.
Yeah, and that's the claim that they used. That was the argument that they used. That was a ruse to cover. And they always have some kind of good excuse.
What kind of, if it was occupational health and safety, what were the dangers? What were the concerns that they raised? And was there any evidence for those claims?
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I'd have to update myself. I wasn't listening Monday, but I remember the case. There were a lot of concerns. There was concerns he wasn't a faculty member or member of staff, that they didn't have insurance to cover that situation. The procedures he was using were considered dangerous by some. He'd breached a few, not deliberately, but he'd breached a few rules as far as methodologies and safety. Having worked at a university myself for years, I could actually see those concerns. You've got a what they call a duty of due care, not only for protection of people from themselves, but protection of the staff and students, and especially when you're in a public facility. And they did offer him some courtesies as far as using some equipment in the lab, but there was no way it was related to the technology. And the claims of the technology, I mean, what he's claiming, there wasn't much there, really. It's nothing there. And if there was, he could have continued with it in a private lab or with private funding or with other people assisting him, and it never came to anything. And quite often you get these stories of this oppression or, you know, I work with some great institutions. I work with a great team of PhD scientists here, engineers and that, and we never see any signs of any form of, I'm not saying it didn't happen in the past, but at the moment, governments, industry, individuals, everybody, they want solutions. They want the energy crisis solved. They want pollution and the environment improved. They're actually very, very supportive to it. But more importantly, they want the truth. And every time I've seen examples of claimed suppression or MIBs or interference, it's normally when they have to put up or shut up. And it's, you know, the day before, oh, I was visited and threatened. Okay. I'm not saying it's never happened, but in a lot of cases, you really do have to look at both sides of the story.
Now, in the conspiracy world, this is also the case. Many people will claim that their shows are hacked by the NSA or whatever, when it's actually the host or the network's own incompetence that's to blame. running through the absolute documented facts, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, in order to produce a conclusive result in terms of proving suppression, I believe is actually a very important part of this. Now, that said, as Mark did illustrate, suppression does happen and has happened. This happened to Nikola Tesla, didn't it? This happened to, I think, Cameron Pogue. He created the Pogue carburetor, allegedly got 200 miles per gallon using vaporizing fuel instead of direct fuel injection as we have today. I've seen a number of examples, but again, I'm not a intense researcher, so I can't prove 100% exactly what the entire apparatus and what all the evidence involved in these alleged suppressions actually is. I just don't know. But we do have an admission on all sides here from Mark, myself, and from Sterling that suppression can and does happen. Individual case-by-case basis and evidential analysis, on the other hand, is the key to these.
Right. I would like to just make a couple of points in response to what Mark said. I think he makes some very reasonable points about how things are done in the university and why they would expel this person from the campus.
I agree.
Those are good, some good arguments that he made. And to a certain extent, I would relent that in this case, it was not a case of quote-unquote suppression. It was a case of a impedance mismatch, a guy who was trying to do cutting-edge technology research, and the university didn't appreciate the way he was doing it for good reasons. My comeback from a vantage point of suppression on a larger scale is that the academic environment is extremely slow-moving. This not-invented-here syndrome is so difficult to work through that that's why a lot of the best inventions through time have come from garage inventors. For example, a really excellent technology, the jet turbine, was not invented by Boeing. It wasn't invented by some jet manufacturer. It was invented in a garage, and the guy just about, he was broke, and finally somebody came and gave him some money, gave him a chance. He said, if you can get this thing to run for 20 minutes, we'll help you out. And he crossed his finger, and luckily his prototype was able to last 20 minutes, and the rest is history. This was a garage technology. And so historically what has happened, there's a principle that new wine cannot be put into old bottles. Academia represents old bottles. New wine represents the new breakthrough ideas. And that's why I am on the lookout outside the box, because historically it's been that way. And even though, yes, we run across a lot of bogus things, a lot of scams, a lot of people who are well-meaning but just don't have what they claim to have, like Mark says very well, that does happen. The reason I keep looking and the reason I keep hoping and the reason that I believe first is because historically that has been where the winners come from. And I want to help the winner be a winner by identifying and supporting him rather than suppressing him.
Sterling, if we could also address Mark's second point, do you currently use anything of a free energy device type nature to power your home?
If I did,
the world
would know about it, and everyone would have one. We're not there yet, and it's to my chagrin that I thought 11 years ago when I first started into this that we were a few months away from having these things available in the marketplace, and it always seems like they're really close. But there's a lot of factors as to why we don't have those, and I don't know that we necessarily need to go into these now because I want to give Mark time to talk and whatnot. But no, I don't have anything in my house that's powered by quote-unquote exotic free energy technology.
Okay.
But I am very hopeful that we will very soon. There's some very promising technologies that Mark would agree are promising. Cold fusion, for example, is making some great strides, which is not recognized by mainstream academia yet.
Now, Sterling, I wanted to jump and offer a question to both of you, and it's about patenting. What are the requirements for actually obtaining a patent? Does your device have to work, or is it simply an intellectual concept, an idea that you're patenting so nobody else can copy or replicate that specific idea or form of technology? And if so, does that mean that the patent then is owned by the patent office and other people can't use it? I mean, what's the parameters here? I'd like to address that to Mark first, if that's possible.
Well, it's how you word a patent. If you say, I've got something that creates free energy as perpetual motion, you'd probably have to get up and prove it to them. You know, they're not silly people. However, when it comes to devices such as we mentioned, hydrogen devices and magnetic motors, they're normally worded in such a way that, yes, and the water is converted to hydrogen and then inputted into an engine. People that where claims patents have been awarded, that later on they say, oh, look, I've got a patent, it's a free energy device. It's not normally worded in a way that they're claiming free energy. They're just claiming part of the process. The second part of it is, depending where the patent, the law's changed quite a bit over the years, but normally you don't have to produce a working gizmo in front of them unless you're making a very exotic claim. If you're making a very exotic claim, then you would actually have to produce I suggest, more evidence, scientific evidence or something to support your claim. So it's a little bit tricky, and it's all to do with the devil's in the detail and how you word these things. But there are a lot of patents. Like there's one recently claimed on a PAP engine or noble gas engine. The guy's been claiming, I've got a patent for 2 or 3 years. A lot of people who claim patents have a patent application in pending. That doesn't mean the patent's granted. And it could be 2, 3, 4 years sometimes, people saying, I've got a patent, but it turns out they've got a claim in, and then in the end it gets rejected or they have to go back and rewrite it. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but just because a patent exists doesn't mean that what is claimed in the patent actually can happen and it is an academic exercise.
Okay. Well, that's actually kind of the response that I wanted. You know, just because somebody has a patent doesn't mean that it's guaranteed that whatever the patent is for, in fact, actually works. And again, referring back to what I mentioned earlier about individual case-by-case basis, proving this, that, and the other, it's all very well for people to make claims, but you need to have the evidence to back up said claims. So, Sterling, do you have a response or perhaps a differing opinion?
Yeah, first I would say that I would pretty much agree that my understanding of the patent process is as Mark described it. The only thing I would add to that is that historically the patent office has been, I would argue, parasitical or antagonistic against certain technologies that are actually legitimate and have working devices behind them. For example, cold fusion technologies, if it even mentions the word cold fusion or anything, any derivative thereof, they actually have a policy, and this has been exposed and documented. They had a policy to not award a patent just because of that, and that, in my opinion, is criminal, and is totally contrary to the purpose of the patent office. It's totally political, has nothing to do with science, and that has gone on. I think that's been reformed to a certain extent, but it has been a problem in the past.
Now, I also heard claims that the U.S. Patent Office was indeed taking U.S. patents from the patent holders and selling them to China out from underneath them. And I haven't researched into whether or not that claim is 100% correct. And I'd like either of you to address that when we come back about whether or not there is any foreseen or potential corruption within the patent office itself and their methodologies of approval or disapproval of patent applications. Mark Dancy and Sterling Allen from the Free Energy Wikipedia are my guests. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We'll be right back.
Divided we fall. Unity, please don't desert me.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream. Just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president it seems. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the final segment here of the first hour. My very special guests, Mark Dancy and Sterling Allen, having a debate over free energy devices and the patent office, which is what I wanted to address in this last segment here that we have. And we've got the two guys over for the next hour, and I was thinking we might want to take some callers. But so, is the patent office, and I want some real examples here. Has the patent office ever colluded with big oil or any type of things in order to suppress, sell out, or otherwise impede the creation of new technologies? And it doesn't have to be a free energy device. It could be anything. Any examples you can think of, gentlemen?
The mark first.
Well, I'm not sure about a lot of the things you said. In America, for instance, and they have done this in the past, and it wasn't to suppress, but they have got the ability that if there's a new patent application in, that if it's in the interest of national security, like it may be a process or a key component that somebody could use to build a bomb, in the interest of national defence, they can actually, suppress the technology. Now, to what extent they've abused that over the years, I don't know. I wouldn't have a clue.
But do you believe that there's a possibility that they have abused it?
Well, anything's possible. But the examples I know of actually did have genuine, concerns they did have about, yes, this could be a bit of a threat if this got out there in the wrong hands. But you really don't know. It's behind closed doors, a lot of this stuff. It's it has happened. To what extent, I don't know. As far as selling the secrets out to China, I can't quite figure that one out. But anything's possible. I mean, I watch movies here and you think, oh, wow, did that really happen? But they have got the ability to do that in the interest of national defence. It has happened. To what extent, I haven't got a clue.
Mm-hmm. Sterling?
Yeah, I was just disrupted because I'm here in Brazil and somebody just rang the door to the gate and I'm not sure what to do here because I'm on the radio and somebody wants to come in.
If you want to run down and quickly answer the gate, just put the phone down.
Okay.
And when you come back, just let us know that you're back so we can address the question to you. You know the question we're asking too about whether or not there is the possibility for suppression under national security for the Patents Office. Now, that's in terms of the United States. Now, I define the word security to mean tyranny, essentially. So, the old saying, the founding fathers, those who sacrifice their liberty for security wind up losing both and deserve neither. So when something's classified under national security, it seems to me that they're classifying it so that they can keep the national tyranny going. But that's just a broad brush stroke.
That's a fair enough comment. I mean, it's a fair enough comment. I mean, the media, my observations of the media here compared to the freedoms we have in Australia and New Zealand, it's chalk and cheese. It's great. One thing I wanted to touch on a bit later is why everybody's looking for the, and Sterling does a great job, by the way. Everybody, I even threw some bucks his way recently to help him keep going, is he does a great job hunting out all of these exotic and weird and wonderful technologies. I guess where we disagree is in the conclusion, is it real or not? And that's where we go hammer and tong, as you can see, that we disagree, is that he might declare it's real. I say, show me the data. When the data's in, then start claiming it's real. And the reason I'm like that is sometimes some of these unscrupulous people, the snake oil salesmen, come into this field of free energy because they find easy targets, poor people who should know better go and invest in something because they want to be part of the next big thing. So that's where we disagree. I'm more of show me the data, but by all means report on it, report the claims, but just make sure before you proclaim it's real, go and check out and put the other side of the story. So that's our fundamental difference. Otherwise, we're both on the same quest.
Okay, Sterling, you're back, are you?
Yeah. Is somebody bringing me my breakfast for tomorrow?
Oh, you've got to love that breakfast. Okay, would you be able to elaborate onto your concerns maybe about the Patent Office? And I made the point just while you were away that I define the word security to mean tyranny. So when the old saying, those who have the want to sacrifice their liberty for security, lose both and deserve neither.
Yeah.
So when something's classified under national security, it's simply to ensure that the nation has tyranny?
I would tend to agree that in many cases that is the operative principle, that it's tyranny that's being protected, not national security of the United States as it used to protect freedom. But I would also agree with Mark that there are certainly some cases where there is a genuine national security prerogative that they have. But the instances that I know of don't fit into that classification. And if you were to ask me to list some examples, We do have a page on our website. We used to own the domain name. I think we still do, energysuppression.com/PezWiki page, where we've got, you know, some 30, 40 different cases that are some of the instances that have happened or alleged to have happened over time, including some patent issues that we're talking about. And there's links to the patent, national security documentation, and all that kind of stuff. So you can get more information there.
Okay, seems in some cases irrational insecurity rather than national security. Now, Mark said earlier, he used a term which is synonymous with fraud. He used the term snake oil. And you know who that reminds me of? Big Bill Rockefeller. He's the Primarch of the... No kidding. He was the Primarch of the Rockefeller family. He's the person who actually amassed their fortune. And you can look up his history. He literally was a traveling snake oil salesman.
Yeah.
Except, with one exception... He didn't just go into individual towns by himself, scam the town, and move off with all their money. He actually hired a legion of con men to con huge amounts of areas at a time and move on. This is how he amassed so much wealth. Then he decided that in order to secure said wealth, he would put it into oil. And in order to, I think it was under U.S. Standard Oil, it might have been after his time, his forebears carried on, they had this this process called sweating, where they would lower their prices artificially through Rockefeller Standard Oil in order to beat out the competition and destroy them. It was kind of like, you're either going to sell us your business now and we're going to have a monopoly, or we're going to artificially lower our prices below yours so that you're going to lose all your money and then we'll buy you out anyway, right?
And I wonder, at that time was electric vehicles. A lot of the cars back then were electric.
Hmm. Indeed, I heard that they were much more popular than the other cars, which were smoky and loud and kind of scary.
Actually, what you're talking about there, actually, they apply in the retail industry in some countries and so-called free capitalist world, where a massive retailer will give somebody a huge contract buying their product. And it's subject to being paid after it's sold, and they'll put it in a warehouse for 2 years. And so this poor company's got no income, so they say, oh, we'll buy out now, you're in trouble. It's because they're holding all their stock, bought all their stock and not selling it. So they've got no income. There's all sorts of tricks. So back when Rockefeller did it, he was doing it then, but nothing's changed today. Big companies, big capitalists, they all do similar things today.
Would it say that they were some of the progenitors of this type of methodology of suppression and that kind of thing? Or has this been going on since the beginning of business?
Well, here's an interesting twist that I'd like to throw in the mix here, that one of the ways that they're suppressing technology is by having inventors come up with decoy technologies that are bogus or fraudulent to play the field and to waste our time.
What evidence have you got of that?
Just conjecture. Just a guess.
Conjecture.
Just throwing it out as a possibility to consider.
Sorry, go ahead, Mark. In fact, we've only got about maybe 30 seconds if you want to finish a point before
One thing I do want to say, I'm very, like I said, Sterling does a great job. I enjoy what he does. But there is a lot of good technologies now that do exist, and it's not the silver bullet, it's not free energy, but clever application of good technologies is making a difference and will in the future. So I'm very optimistic that we can bring about good change.
All right. So I want to also make a point here as well that people sometimes spend their entire lives working on something that they believe to be true but don't know until they've spent most of their life working on it. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
Yeah. And I don't know about you guys, but I plan to spend the vast majority of my life, or however long it takes, to try and understand as much about the world and all of its various nooks and crannies of research and development and exposure of scumbaggery as I can, because I don't know. It's not necessarily that I personally need some kind of gratification for all the truth to come out. It's just personally I want to find out what really is true, just for my own peace of mind. We'll be right back. Mark Dancy and Sterling Allen from PestWiki.com are my guests. Alert the masses. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live 5 days a week on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. You got to love this network. There's so many very, very interesting shows and guests that you can just turn on American Freedom Radio. And I've started to do this more recently, is just when I get up, just turn on American Freedom Radio. Sure enough, there's an amazing host talking about stuff that's really, really awesome and teaching me stuff that I don't already know. Get into the habit, ladies and gentlemen. But don't worry, just a drug, and it'll wear off soon enough. My very special guests are Mark Dancy and also Sterling Allen from PestWiki.com. And we'd like to take some callers if anybody has questions about free energy for either Sterling or Mark. The number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525 if you'd like to join the conversation. So I wonder where we take this from here, because as far as I see it, the energy debate has been going on and raging for much time. There is an awful lot of money, power, and control involved within the industry. And I don't know if anybody realizes this. Without electricity, we would not have our society at all, okay? You wouldn't be able to cook your food, heat your house, or in the case of southern states, cool it. In fact, I heard a theory the other day that if it weren't for air conditioning, the population of Texas would be very, very sparse indeed. You know, there wouldn't be such a thing as Dallas or Austin, and there wouldn't be any of these big buildings or anything like that, because it would be just too fracking hot. We are absolutely and utterly dependent on energy. And my theory upon that fact, that we are dependent on energy, is that somebody is benefiting from the control of said energy. And I mentioned the Rockefeller family before, and U.S. Standard Oil, and now we have the Seven Sisters, who are, not allegedly, but really are, buying out competition, shutting down oil refineries. Apparently there are many oil, you know, tankers and things of that nature who are basically just sitting in dock waiting and having to pay huge quantities of dough all the time, just to sit there because they can't get their oil refined. And the bottleneck worldwide is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, not because the oil's running out, but because they're trying to perpetuate artificial scarcity so that they can maintain control of humanity. Now, that's my opinion. I was wondering what your guys' opinion is on this, Mark.
Well, I wanted to give you a couple of statistics. 1.6 billion people don't have electricity in the world, but they're relying on kerosene lighting, and they're burning off 77 billion litres of kerosene a year, 2.4 million burn victims in India alone each year. So even though they haven't got electricity, they're dependent on big oil for the kerosene. So you're correct. It even reaches out where people don't have electricity. Somehow somebody's controlling the energy. Energy is the currency of the future. It's the power base of the future, and it's being exercised by those people that you mentioned. However, the optimism is little changes, just little changes, can have the biggest impact. 600 million people don't have the ability to charge their cell phones. You think, why in the hell have they got a cell phone? But they do. I was in the villages in the Philippines recently, and they all got a cell phone, but they've got kerosene lights, and they have to all, you know, gather their cell phones and go to a main town somewhere and plug them in and charge them and get them back, because they need cell phones for safety and education even. So what can you do? Now, there's been some really great programs out there that have just started to kick off, where they have little baby solar-powered, small 4-inch by 4-inch solar cell with a little light. Makes a huge difference. They don't have to spend half or a quarter or 10% of their income on kerosene anymore. They're using the sun's energy, and they're able to put that money towards better food or education for their kids. It's having a huge impact. We're working on a technology now, Sterling knows about, that will be able to give them water-powered lights and devices to charge their phones, and it will run at a cost. The only consumable will be 10% of what they're paying now, and it gives them the freedom of having their own energy independence. And I think the way of the future for all of us, if we want to live in a good society, is how do you get that energy independence? Is it putting a few solar panels on your roof? Is it converting to something in your vehicle that will mean you don't have to rely on petrol or gasoline, as they call it here? So I think sometimes little baby changes can actually bring about big change and free us from those who are controlling us at the moment through the energy cycle. And you're 100% correct. Even these poor people without electricity, they're still being controlled by the big oil companies. So small changes, big impact.
Yeah, I would say ditto on what he said. It's very articulate and
well-illustrated.
Okay. The thing I would add to that is that on the exotic end of the spectrum, that one of the things that is really cool about these technologies as we look at them and what, you know, if they're anything close to what the inventors allege them to be or what the initial testing shows that they could be, we're talking about devices that could be a lot cheaper than grid power. So not only would they be ecological, they would be economical. They would be a no-brainer to adopt. And one of the reasons why the powers that be would have a vested interest in suppressing these technologies is because they basically render the powers that be obsolete by removing their ability to control people through energy, because energy as the new currency becomes distributed as opposed to centralized. Right now we have a very centralized, authoritarian-based political system worldwide that is in its heyday, about to collapse as I read things, the tea leaves, so to speak. I see free energy of the exotic variety being a primary catalyst for the empowerment of the people to have the ability to not be dependent anymore and to be able to not spend so much time working for the man, but working at doing things that they love, helping support the local community, having more free time to develop their talents and so they can develop their skills to work at a job that they really enjoy doing, as opposed to going and clocking in somewhere at some factory making things that people throw away after 6 months because they break.
Can I ask something? And I want to get you both of your opinions on this. There's the International Atomic Energy Commission and the State Energy Commission, or what? There's all these organizations established, things of officialdom to investigate, regulate certain things in society. Is there something like that for the investigation and development of new energy devices? Because as far as I know, the people who are taking individual responsibility in order to make those things happen are people like you, Sterling, are people like Foster Gamble from the Thrive Movement. I haven't heard of any element of officialdom that actually takes this seriously and is funding research and things of that nature. I don't know if they exist.
Yeah, I was going to refer to Mark has really been pushing hard to establish such a body. I formed last 2008 or 2005, an organization called the New Energy Congress, whose purpose was to help vet these technologies. In many regards, it kind of fizzled with a little bit of back burner activity, some, you know, consulting type of activity. But what we need is revitalization of that function so that we can police ourselves. We don't need to have the government step in and do this. I have a saying on our website: he who is one step ahead is a genius. He who is two steps ahead is a crackpot. And when I was mentioning that to an Estonian audience one time, somebody in the audience quipped, "He who is one step behind is the government." They're the last place you look for cutting-edge, leading, entrepreneurial type of spirit, and that's what free energy is all about. So the best you're going to get from them is suppression, and of course that's not good. So you're not going to look to the governments to be leading and providing oversight on something like this. It's going to have to come from the private sector, and that's what we're trying to accomplish. And Mark Danzy's actually been phenomenal in making recommendations that we're in process of trying to implement. And it's going to take some time because we've got so much going on right now, a lot of irons in the fire, hard to implement all these great ideas that are coming out.
Well, the support from government will come with establishment credibility. There's actually quite a bit of private money out there at the moment investigating these exotic technologies, but most of the people keep the research sort of underground for a variety of reasons. They're not scared of suppression, but it might be, hey, you know, don't want to be associated with this just yet. But the government, from what I see, industry and the media, if you can provide credibility, then you'll get their support. And Sterling was mentioning that we've got a few people involved now of coming up with some reputable engineers, scientists and standards. So if somebody makes a claim, whatever it is, a magnetic motor or whatever, that we apply those standards to it. And if it passes those standards, it will receive government support. It will get government funding. It will get private industry sector funding. It will get media support. However, Sterling is correct. It's not really good to look towards governments for leadership in energy or anything else. But I just want to follow on with one other point. What really, really is important often is government legislation. Now, I'll give an example, and I know Australia is the small state attached to New Zealand across the Tasman there, but they have done some very, very clever legislation. In my home state of South Australia, they've now up to 28% wind power. They're heading towards 40% by the end of this decade. The solar subsidy schemes, it costs people $2 a watt to put solar on their houses. And at the moment, if you go solar, it actually works out half the cost of buying electricity from the electricity people. So I think clever, where the governments have got a role, is not, like Sterling said, they're not going to lead us in the right direction, but clever legislation will enable people to gain their energy independence. The United States, they gave a lot of people, a lot of factories, corporations, money like Solyndra, and where did it go? Nobody knows. But in Australia, Germany, Spain, Italy, and a whole lot of other countries, they've subsidised the individuals to put these energy devices on their houses and help go towards energy independence. So I think the government has got leadership in clever legislation to empower the people. So that's my soapbox anyway.
Mm-hmm. I also like to tell the cautionary tale as well, that people could do this on their own and without government mandate or without government intervention. It's simply a facilitator. The problem being, of course, that it takes money from people in an involuntary manner in order to pay for these schemes that not everybody can take advantage of.
That's true. Carbon tax, good example.
Here's another thing. There's the double standard here. I remember I went to the Greyland Community Festival a number of years ago, and there was an eco village there, had a bunch of stalls and things of that nature. All right, now, you guys are talking about new developmental technology, cold fusion, you know, really advanced stuff that could actually not only keep our current standard of living, but advance it stratospherically so to solve energy dependence, to get the dependence off of big oil, I don't necessarily see as the usage of carbon based fuels as really that much of a problem, so long as the big corporate interests and things of that nature who are operating these companies act in a reasonable, environmentally sound basically honest manner, which they do not by any stretch of the imagination. But here's the piece of technology that these green people came up with: a bicycle that has a blender attached to it, so that you can sit there and pedal as hard as you can in order to make yourself a smoothie. In my opinion, that's not an advanced piece of technology. In my opinion, that is not going to take us into the next century feeling better off. In my opinion, what they're looking at is decreasing the dependence on any form of energy, so that, I don't know, what are we going to do? Go back to the land, you know, and do everything hand cranking like it was a little old land or the prairie or some crap like that? Come on, you know. I don't think that we should even try to go backwards. We should always be striving to go forwards.
Yeah, I look at life kind of from a forced view in terms of philosophical as to why these technologies haven't come out and what it's going to take, what kind of transformation needs to happen. I see free energy technologies as being very empowering, but they can also empower the opposite team, so to speak. You know, if you can fly a drone without ever stopping, imagine the governments being able to put their spy gear and the weaponized drones up there to increase the police state. And so some people that argue that until we get our act together socially and enlightenment-wise, these technologies are going to be held back not by the powers that be, but by the angels who are saying to the crew, so to speak, stay off stage, not time to come on yet, hold on, you know, keep warming up, not quite ready yet, you know, we need a little more enlightenment on the planet, we need a little few things to work out before you can come out on stage. That's the paradigm that seems to make sense to me as to why these things are being held back, because there are so many things that are so close, and it's just like pulling your hair out going, man, what? Why is this not materializing to the market? Because there really are some amazing things out there. And so I really think it comes down to a evolution of society's enlightenment and their awakeness to the powers that be and the need to basically raise up from being slaves to being empowered and not letting it's kind of like pulling back the curtain in The Wizard of Oz, saying, hey, you know, these guys are a bunch of peons. Why are we letting them control us? It's like,
could I interject here?
Sterling, come on, get off the grass, man. You know, there's two reasons why they'll make it viable. One, they have to work first. That's number one. The technology's actually got to work.
Yeah, but you don't even believe them in the conspiracy.
No, let me finish. The second one.
Yeah, hold on, let him finish.
And the second one is to be commercially viable. Now, we're doing research in the technologies, you know, have a self-powering cell phone or you know, if you've got self-powering devices, then you don't have to buy off the grid. You don't have to buy off the big thing. So just look at devices that are self-powering.
All right. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Dancy and Sterling Allen from PearsWiki.com. 218-339-8525.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the U.S. Standard Oil Development Procedure Office, where we make sure that any decent technology that might free humanity and actually make us evolve as a species gets really badly suppressed, and the people who are developing said technology get their offices raided and maybe their family get decapitated as well. Welcome back.
Also, my very special guests, Mark Dancy and Sterling Allen. Now, Sterling, I had a point of conjecture. You said that perhaps these technologies should not be released, maybe because humans aren't evolved enough to use it. And I'm actually of virtually the opposite persuasion to that mentality. I believe, and I've seen, that even the introduction of small bits of technology actually radically evolves the human race and its mentalities. Like, let's say, for example, just personally, I needed a new iMac, a bigger, more powerful one, because my old one just wasn't good enough anymore. When I got it, the quality of the show skyrocketed. I produced more content, more videos, things of that nature. So in my opinion, what happens is you introduce the technology, then you get the human evolution as a direct result, because people's priorities change when their abilities change. And technology is simply an extension of human ability. You extend human ability, you increase and hasten human evolution. The point is not to wait for human evolution to get to a certain point before you introduce technologies. I think it's the opposite way around. You introduce technologies in order to get human evolution to a certain point. And Mark had a example of Africa using these little solar kits and things like that to have lighting at night. I'd like you to reiterate what you told me over the break, Mark, if you would.
Yes, what they found, they've done extensive studies in Africa where communities where they used to use kerosene lighting, apart from the health issues of people being burnt, and I think tuberculosis was 10 times more prevalent in kerosene-lit hut, where they've introduced little solar-powered lights that charge up during the day, charges up some little batteries, they've actually saved a lot of money, up to 20 or 30% of their income, by not having to buy kerosene. And what they found, and there's no attempt to say, oh, what are you going to do with the money now? 2 years later, when they surveyed them, they found that a lot of the villagers actually spent money on books and education and schooling for their children, plus they had the ability to study with the solar light. It was a bit more powerful and a bit better than the kerosene light, and it brought about a huge change in those villages. And I've seen in other societies where just a little bit of technology like that can bring back, can bring such a huge fundamental change just by introducing something as simple as going from fossil fuel to solar-powered lighting. And in India alone, I'll give an example, 80 million people still use kerosene lighting, and 2.4 million people get burnt every year, not killed, but, you know, burns of varying degrees because of kerosene lights. So I agree with you. Give them a little something, and then mankind tends to evolve. If they've got the tool, they tend to find more uses for the tool, and it advances their knowledge and their society. So I'm with you 100% on that. We don't have to wait for everybody to tree hug.
Now, let's also qualify this. That's what happens when you introduce a small technological development. There's a lot of flow-on effects. What happens if you introduce an enormous technological development? Like, what if instead of giving these people just one solar panel with one solar light, what if you were capable of introducing, say, rocket ship travel or something like that to people in Africa? How about that? If they could all of a sudden travel the stars, could you imagine that would be dangerous, or would it just be a simple exponential benefit? This is just purely theoretical, of course.
Well, look at the internet. If you want to see what happened, just for Sterling cuts in, you want to see what a big technological change, look at what the internet's done, how it's empowered mankind, the invention, it's created social media, everything else. Look, in 20 years, two decades, I was at the start of the internet revolution. I managed one of the first internet companies in Australia. And to see the revolution of how it changed our daily lives, just how we're communicating now, it's empowered people, it's made media more accountable. There is one technological change, very minor you might think, but what a huge impact it's had in two decades, and how man's evolved, I think, to the better since the internet's been introduced.
But I think it's a double-edged sword as well, because today we are completely dependent on the internet, and were it to go away or something like that, you know, survival would actually be in jeopardy. Vast amounts of businesses and things like that. Now, that's worst-case scenario, let's say, when technology fails. And I believe that that mentality has its place, but I also believe that that mentality is dangerous and prevents development.
Yep. Anyway, Sterling, you better talk, Sterling. I've been hogging
it. I really love the points you guys are making, and I think they're phenomenal. And the thing I would add to what you're saying is that from a forced point of view, you know, the development, undergraduate and graduate degrees were in microbiology, bioelectrochemistry. So I've studied for example, I took an entire course on cell development of an embryo from fetus to the fully developed, from the sperm and the egg to the fully developed fetus. And all the different steps that this thing goes through, it was just phenomenal in how one thing triggers the next thing. And growth is incremental. If you try and do things too fast, then it's like trying to help the chick get out of the egg. It actually is not beneficial to go too fast. And that may be one of the reasons why some of these more exotic technologies that could provide the kind of cheap, 24/7, readily available, reliable power source maybe is a step that society is not ready for yet. There may be something more incremental, such as what Mark's talking about, this flashlight that he's working on introducing, would be that kind of incremental baby step type of modality. It was the powers that be, so to speak, the CIA and whatnot, introduced the internet as a way to control people, and yet it's kind of backfired to some regard as to...
Well, sorry, Sterling. I got to challenge you. Where did the CIA introduce the internet? I was there at the birth of the internet. It was actually developed by academics at universities and gradually spread across the academic community. It wasn't introduced by the CIA to control people. Come on.
Well, you don't have all the inside track of, you know, who's...
I do, actually.
So is there a person that we can point to who invented the internet?
Well, let me ask you this question, just so the audience knows where you're coming from. Do you believe in a global conspiracy that is overseeing and trying to establish a new world order?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No.
See, you don't have that worldview, and so the audience knows where you're coming from. You don't get it.
Hang on. I travel the world. I've got friends in many countries. In November, I did 6 countries, 4 states.
Do you think
I travel the world. I see conspiracies.
Hold on a second. Let Mark finish, please, Dylan.
Okay.
I see conspiracies in certain industries and, in fact, some corrupt governments. But I don't think anybody could put a mechanism together successfully without anybody really knowing about it that controlled everything and everything. It's simply not true. You go and chase some of these conspiracy theories down, and there's just no evidence there to support them. There's a lot of speculation, there's a lot of allegations, and in some cases there are some bad practices in business and in government, but no, not globally. And when you say the internet, actually there was a guy in England, he was featured on the Olympic opening ceremony in London, is called the father of the internet. But it really started from people doing little emails between campuses, and the internet was actually rampant through universities before it even went public. And I was part of the birth of the internet. Not me personally, I was involved in the management of early internet companies, and it really did come from a collaborative effort from academics. The third Worldwide Web Conference was held in Australia at our university, and it was a collaborative effort to improve education, science and research. And then suddenly everybody caught on and says, hey, this will be cool for the rest of society. And it just evolved virtually by itself. It's just,
now, as we were saying before, government's usually the ones that are a step behind. Do you think that it's possible that the inventors would invent the internet, and then the government, being one step behind, would see it as an opportunity to surveil the population's habits and form profiles on people?
Of course.
So in this whether or not they create it, it's the question of whether or not they are currently using it in order to build profiles on people and indeed control things in some way, shape or form. Because I don't believe that total control of everything has ever been possible, and God willing, it never will be. When people are talking about a global conspiracy to control things, they're not talking about complete total mind control, complete total economic control, complete total this, that or the other. Although that may be the goal, and if you look back through history, that has been the goal of almost anybody who obtains enormous, inordinate amounts of power, is to simply gain more and more and more in an insane, psychopathic fashion, to the point in which people get fed up with it, overthrow it, and they wind up being killed, or as happened to Mussolini, hung in the street and spat on.
So if I could come back on that, standing back in the force view, comparing society to an individual, when an individual gives into sin, they become captive to sin. When a society gives into corruption and to decadence and to immorality and our media and stuff, then that society goes into captivity. And that is a philosophical basis of why I see the world going in the direction it's going, in terms of going into captivity to the New World Order. And what has to happen to come out of that captivity is there have to be a turning to God, a repentance of the sin, so to speak. And then God comes in, he intercedes, he changes the heart, and you have a new society. And that's the metamorphosis that people like the project you were mentioning earlier with Foster Gamble and the Thrive Movement are fostering the idea of, let's get out of the captivity mentality and let's get into the abundance mentality. Let's turn back to a focus and a dependence, or not dependence, but a recognition that we need to be good, not evil. And so that's why I believe in a conspiracy, is because the conspiracy is the functional mechanism to impose a slavery that we deserve because of our bad choices, and we get out of that by making good choices. And I see free energy as being one of the ways that we mechanically enable that extrication from their captivity.
Mm. I'd also like to add to that, and then change topics, if I may. Again, back through the lessons of history. Usually, it only takes between two to three generations for any society, whether that be Americans, Germans, the French, the Spanish, or the British, or anything. Usually, only 2 to 3 generations of stability is what you can really gain before it descends into something really maniacal. And so, I feel that we've experienced a number of generations of relative peace, prosperity, and freedom within the 20th century, with of course the massive wars and constant war really that's going on. But in our societies, we've not seen that. I've not seen people being blown up in front of me. You know, I'm sure that I'd be turned into some jittering, teeth chattering monkey if my neighborhood started getting carpet bombed, as people, elders in Britain would understand. Now, moving on from this, understanding that tyranny is not just a possibility, but it is the rule in history. You can't escape it. It always happens. The other thing that I wanted to do and change the subject here is the unintended consequences of the implementation of technology. The example that I wanted to bring up was cell phones. For example, can you remember any of your friends' phone numbers now? You know, just think about it for a minute, ladies and gentlemen, because I remember reading an article in, I believe it was either the Times of London or the Telegraph, forget which, don't really care, it's irrelevant, but people don't remember phone numbers anymore. We used to be able to, 8460440. I remember my childhood phone number. It's disconnected now. Don't try ringing it, but I remember that from back in the day. That was before I had a cell phone. Now, because there is no need for me to have memory, because of my cell phone taking all my notes for me, it makes me completely and utterly dependent on that technology. That is the double-edged sword. Now, we talked about planned obsolescence, essentially, that we will make inferior technologies and in order so that they will break down so that we can keep the economy cycling on. I don't like that. In fact, if I'm ever going to buy garden tools, my preference would be to buy garden tools from garage sales off of elderly people. Why? Because back in the day, when those garden tools were made, they were built to last. Even though they're 30, 40, 50 years old at the moment, they still will last a lot longer than something you will buy brand new off the shelf today. And I think the current mode of planned obsolescence is part of the reason why we have such a wasteful and a polluted society. And lastly, I want to address your point, Sterling, about the drip feeding of technology. I think if you drip feed it, all it does is allow people to keep selling you inferior stuff when they know that they've got better stuff lying around anything, and you hold people back by not pulling out all the stops. We'll be right back.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. I'll do a dessert, you prick. Give me that dessert. I'll have a Bloody Mary. Yeah, give me a whiskey sour. Yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. You want to know what it's like? You can experience right. Going to New
Welcome
Zealand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
Very simple. Sit in a chair.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, freaking miles away by any stretch of the imagination or the circumference of the globe. Now, I the last point I was making before the break was about drip-feeding technology to people. Okay, here's an example. It's a two-word example. iPhone 5. I don't think... See, I'm wondering... There's two questions on my mind. Are they purposely drip-feeding the technology to us so that they can keep selling us a product with one tiny little thing that's better, one tiny little thing that's better, one tiny little thing that's better? Or is the rate of technological development today so fast, so incredible, that by the time they've brought out iPhone 4, by the time they've marketed it, they've already developed new technology that's far superior for the iPhone 5? And just simply have not released it yet before it can be marketed, because you made the point, Mark, that it has to work and it has to be economically viable in order for it to be released. So I'd love to hear your guys' perspectives on this.
I think you're right on both fronts. I think it's like Microsoft was the master of this, just keep drip-feeding you changes or even making what you're using redundant. You have to get the latest or else you're going to miss out. So I think you're correct with that, just drip-feed it, because it's an incredible marketing toy. But also in some cases, you have to be careful. I'll give you an example. Today I read in the news that the new Dreamliner, the Boeing jet, is now grounded around the world because their little batteries catch on fire, their little lithium-ion batteries catch on fire, so they're grounding the whole fleet worldwide until they solve that problem. So sometimes it's, as you said, it's a commercial decision. Other times they're just not quite sure and they want to have it tested a bit further, because the worst thing we can think of, we're developing a product now that's going worldwide. The thing that drives us the most is the fear of having a recall or something's wrong. So it's fear and greed driving it, and that's why you're getting drip fed. It's two forces, fear and greed, which is the two basic human elements.
Sterling?
Yeah, I'd like to address something that has been brought up a couple of times about the Internet, and make a point about a lot of people in your audience. And I love the little clip you have in there about, you know, religion destroys spirituality, doctors destroy law, etc. That was remarkable. I'd love to get that text so I can memorize it and repeat it and give you credit for it. That was really good. But in looking at the pending very highly probable collapse of civilization as they pull the carpet out from underneath the economic viability, these guys who are in control are sociopaths, and they want to destroy the planet. They're like the gunman that goes into the school and shoots up a bunch of kids, except it's the whole planet that they're playing target practice with. And these are very dark souls, and they do not have good intentions for the planet. And as you look at the pending collapse of civilization and the worst-case scenario, we're looking at basically going back to caveman days type of ability and survival where there's no infrastructure. That's the worst case scenario, and I don't want to go there. I would love to see us get the ability to do an end run around these guys by introducing some of these technologies that ennoble the individual so we don't fall that far. And I have to look at, for example, the Internet turns us into a group body, a cooperative body, and I see that as an advance forward in our development, and that our destiny is not to be individuals able to grow our own food, make our own clothes, et cetera. We're meant to work together. One person specializes in music and makes beautiful art pieces. Another person grows the garden. And, you know, going back to caveman days is not where we're supposed to be headed. And so my belief is that we should try and foster those things that will nourish that kind of a future, and not all hunker down and get ready for the end of the world as we know it. Even though that is a probable future, my tactic is to do everything I can to prevent that probable future by introducing technologies, whether they be incremental or groundbreaking, total transformational technologies. I'm for seeing them all come forward. And the only reason I posit these ideas about this incremental introduction is, as I scratch my head and wonder why it's taking so long, I just can't help but wonder that maybe the angels who are ultimately in charge based on the decisions that we make, maybe this is one of the reasons why things are held back, is because we're not ready. That's just, you know, it's one of the reasons that I throw out there as a possible reason that puts the responsibility back on us of, let's get our act together and help these technologies move forward, identify the real ones, and expose the frauds. And there's one other phenomenon I want to mention really quickly. I call it the rock soup phenomenon. The scammer who came to town says, we're going to make rock soup. And everyone's like, yeah, right, that's impossible. And they said, well, you know, humor me. And so one lady comes, and she brings the onions, another person brings the carrots, another person brings some potatoes, etc. Before long, they had an amazing soup that had nothing to do with rocks. And I think some of these scammers actually, whether intended or not, I don't think even intended, actually serve this rock soup phenomenon. They come up with a technology, for Mark's sake, let's say the magnet motor, you know, maybe they come out and say, I've got this great device, and so people start thinking magnet motors, and they start tinkering, and pretty soon someone comes up with a magnet motor, or a group of people, because the idea was put out there, people started entertaining, and they found a new phenomenon that we thought would never work. So that's something to bear in mind. Even though the scammers are, you know, should not be getting credit for helping things out, sometimes indirectly and ironically, they may do just that.
Kind of like how suppression actually leads to freedom sometimes. Like what I found very interesting, like right now in the United States, is a massive debate about gun control. And again, in the historical context, every single society that has ever banned weapons of any kind, from Edward the Longshanks to Adolf Hitler and Chairman Mao, every single time that the guns have been taken off the citizens but have been retained by the government, the citizens have been enslaved or exterminated. And what's interesting
about Australia?
Yeah. And there's also similar instances coming on in New Zealand as well. But the point being, that in so doing, and this is happening in the United States right now, is a direct result, I believe, maybe in some cases, of this gun ban talks. Gun sales in the United States have skyrocketed enormously. So out of an attempt to ban guns, what they've done is they've spread them more than they ever were before, because of people's fear of having their guns taken off them. I mean, so unintended consequences are a double-edged sword as well. There can be bad unintended consequences and good unintended consequences. And I also wanted to make the analysis based on your point, Sterling, about sociopaths up top. The American Medical Journal, I think back in, it was either 2002 or 2001, I believe, said that a psychopath is usually a nice, smiling, happy, friendly individual who's rather intoxicating and very inspirational when you first meet them, but doesn't have a whole lot of depth to their personality and very few long-lasting relationships out of some sort of pretext, such as a business relationship. And the three most likely places you are to find these individuals is business, media, and politics. What would you say are the three most powerful institutions that influence and control human society? Right? So it becomes very logical to me, knowing that information about psychopaths and where they go to, that our society would be run by them pretty invariably. Now, we've come to the end of the show now, so Mark Dancy, have you got any final words, probably maybe about 30 seconds to wrap up, and then we'll pass it on to Sterling, and then we're gone.
Well, I always encourage Sterling to keep on his quest. I just caution about declaring things real before they are, mainly because you've got to have a responsibility as a journalist to people who perhaps should know better. But a lot of these snake oilsmen pushing free energy do fleece people's bank accounts, do take a lot of people, money out of people. In some cases, they're just trying to help the cause, but they're being ripped off regardless. So that's all I'd say. The other side of things, I believe small changes, little baby technological changes can lead to huge benefits for mankind, like we're talking about with just solar-powered or alternative power energies for third world countries. It will have a flow on effect to all of us. And I'd like to thank you. It's always good to talk to somebody from New Zealand. I love the way you say sex all the time when you're trying to give the score of the football. And thank you very much for your time.
All right. And Sterling, maybe 30 seconds to wrap up.
Sure. I see free energy as being the next huge revolution, like the internet, the computer revolution. And that we're talking exotic free energy technology, and it's very fun to be on the extreme cutting edge. I acknowledge that I sometimes get exuberant and I get ahead of myself, ready, fire, aim. I'm working on it. I'm improving, but I still err sometimes. I'm the cheerleader, and sometimes I cheer things before they're ready to be cheered.
And he has a fantastic high kick, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you thank you very much, Sterling and Mark, for your time. One thing that I'd like to add into this to the end is that I fear that my limited experience in life will limit my expectations of what's possible. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.